Welcome to another episode of Beta Talk. This season is being sponsored by My Energy. Please check them out on their website. Today we are talking about quotations. Quotations, a very emotive topic. The reason being is they involve money, and money engenders emotions. And we're going to talk about quotations because I believe, lots of people believe, that there may be some little bit of a misunderstanding out there from consumers about what they are, what they're supposed to do. We've got two guests on, two fabulous engineers who I really, really sort of value the work they do. I'll put a link to their respective websites in the show notes. We've got Damon, and we're going to be talking to Barry up in beautiful Scotland. They're going to be talking about quotes, giving some of their ideas, giving us some sort of ideas about where that quotation process can engender some sort of, anxiety maybe. There's things like, consumers will often look at two quotes and think, why are they vastly different to one another? Things like that. So we're going to try and attenuate these sort of things. We're going to jump straight in with Damon explaining how quotations can actually sometimes be used against an installer. Good installers that are going out to do these lengthy surveys to provide these detailed quotations, they can then be used. They end up with, a customer will end up with a lot of information on their quotations, and then that can be used just to go and find someone cheaper to install it all with that information. So over to the guys, they'll tell you a little bit more about the quotation process.
I don't mind other people getting quotes, but at that point, you're also feeding information from you, just dragging it. So if they've seen one person, then they're going to see another person, and they're taking some of that information, what first person said, and then they're getting a full picture, often like top installers, without actually paying anything. And then they're going to someone else who's a lot cheaper and taking all that information and giving it them. So it's hard to, that's why I like to try and start with eat loss first before I do anything as such.
Do you give an estimate over the phone?
I've got an email that I send out, what explains who I am, what I do, that I aim to get the Meyer cops, that my radiators I want to be sizing at 50 max temperature. My underfloor I'm wanting to get lower, 35 if possible, 40s. I'm not going to be cheapest there. I might be expensive, I might not be. Give them a rough estimate between, on my average jobs, that it's between 14 and 22,000 on average before the grant. It could be lower, it could be a bit higher depending on circumstances. There's so much variation into an heat pump quote, getting it right. If you make that mistake, it's costing you a lot of money. That's the difference. It's not
so
like
you manage expectations right at the beginning. So you send out an email and say, look, this is what I'm going to do. Yep. This is why I'm doing it, because it's best practice. And it's going to possibly be a higher quote than what other quotes you might get.
Yeah. Like if they get near Octopus, I can't go anywhere near them. Lower end. I'll point out what I do with my water quality as well, like no chemicals. I'll put all like points that push to why you should use a better installer. I'm not a better installer, but push to do things how I think, what I think's the right way, and what works for me. It might not work for someone else, but when I leave a job, I know that I've done everything that I can to make it as best as they can for them, because it's a big investment for them. It's not like they're paying £2,000. They're going to be paying something that they might not ever recoup costs on while they're living in that house. And that's a big loss for somebody.
So, Damon, the word quotation, what does that sort of make you think of?
Always brings up like lead generation sites and markup on materials that people mark up, margin, whatever they want to call it. Usually just installers profit, what people think it is.
Yeah, this question about markup, it's a curious one. Every business school will teach people, if you buy something, you don't sell it exactly the same price. You put your markup. But yet within our industry, there seems to be this sort of real mystery around it. A lot of consumers sort of don't understand why there is markup on materials, but there's very, very good reasons why there is markup on materials, isn't there?
Yeah, you got to think if say for supermarkets buying some food from a country, they don't sell it at what they're buying it on. They've gone out, they've found that product, they've brought it across transportation trust, they've stored it, and then they're selling it to somebody. Like there's money being lost in that process there, time and cost, fuel and other stuff. We materials as well. We've got an added problem that installers, if something fails, it's held with us. Manufacturers don't come out and say, "Oh yeah, it's good about that. We'll pay your hourly rate. You go and change that." They'll just give you either. You'll even fight sometimes not to give you a free part and say it's down to installation error. But majority of the time, you'll get a free part from them. You'll then have to go back and fit that. That's in your time, whether it's a diverter valve on an heating system, because they go quite bad, to be honest. The Honeywell ones were really bad at one stage. Like you were having to drain down then. Then there's inhibitor, then there's deeming fill, then there's setting it back up. You could be here a couple of hours doing that, and that's out of your own pocket. If you didn't have that little bit of markup, and it won't be much on a diverter valve, it might be £9. So you're still not making that back, but you've got to have something there to protect yourself as a business.
You've also got the time. I mean, especially with heat pumps, there's so many little bits and pieces you have to, and every home is different. There's so many little bits and pieces you have to think about procuring, buying for a particular job. And sometimes it's going to take you an awful lot of time just to source just one part, even. Let's say you want to do a plate, external plate exchanger on a particular cylinder, because that's going to be the best for that particular property. You've got to now try and find the best supply for that. That's going to take quite a lot of time. The customer's just going to see that item on the list with a price, and they might Google it and think, well, I can get that cheaper. But they haven't accounted for the amount of time you spent trying to go around,
You're
find where
literally
you can get that.
telling them that. That's why now I'm a bit clever on quotes. I used to itemize everything, but then you'd find that people would start picking it to bits. So now, like, I group stuff together so there's no actually individual price on one item. Not that I'm trying to hide it, but just for the point that you can find anything cheaper now on the internet. And they buy it, and then they want you. If there's an issue with it, the customer then wants you to stand to that time. So I've had to change my terms and conditions. The amount of times that when I was first starting in work, that I'd let them supply me to, "Oh yeah, I'll turn up. This is my hourly rate." You get there, it'd be wrong, something would be damaged, or you give them a price for it, and then you'd have to couldn't do that job, so you earn no money that day. Then you come back and you're doing it for the same price as what you said before because you'd already saved that price. So now I point out my terms and conditions. If they, I won't, I'll only let them supply certain things if they want, and it'll be odd things. But then everything's with them. Liability's got to be on site. If there's any damage, they can inspect it with me. If there's any damage or anything, it goes back to them. My time is then chargeable at whatever time that's took, because there's no other way to do it. In no other industry would people expect you to give them as much free time, much skilled free time, as what you expect to get from an heating engineer
Yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
It
Strange, isn't it?
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's strange. It's very strange.
I've always, well, not, I'm too nice. I give people too much time. Everyone always says it to me, like, just put phone down, or I can spend like 30, 40 minutes on there and then they go to somebody else. And I'm like, you don't realize.
They're asking you, what would I need here? What would you do? What would I need? And then all of a sudden, yeah, they're not even picking you. You just spent 40 minutes, an hour of your time.
I had someone over there ringing me about an heat pump, asking for advice. He'd had a few customers, blah, 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 blah. So I had a conversation. We thought we were going somewhere, and then we're like, "Oh yeah, thanks for that." That rate, and just went, and he'd literally pick my brains on his installation for 30 minutes, and literally I give him too much, and that's like information he'd been trained and learned. So it shouldn't really be free to people, should it?
Now, you
Really.
mentioned something about lead generation sites. That's something that's always caused quite of an emotive response amongst sort of engineers that we know, doesn't it?
When I left work 4 years ago, I went self-employed, and I was always worried about work. I joined Checkatrade. First 4 months, it were buzzing. Like, I think I get at a lower price. I think it might be £60 a month. Loads of work coming through, jobs, not competing really with anyone either. You were just getting them direct to you. And then other work started coming in. So I did slow down a little bit with them, getting them off, but it just seemed to just dwindle out. And then people were ringing you and they were like, oh, but I've just had this price, or I've just had this price. Can you beat it? And you're like, no, you know, and then it comes to end. And I think they wanted about £120 a month to renew it the year after. But at that point, I was in a position where I didn't really need to work. But luckily, you know, things could have went other way. But I still, I don't know what it is. They prey on people having no work and wanting to make money from that situation. But then I think it's underhand how they do certain things get done. Not check trade, I mean across the whole board. I think they give you like fake leads out, and because sometimes numbers didn't work, you know what you got, or no one would get back to you. So I think they were like just keeping your interest going and that. So it's a big money world, isn't it? Lead generation for all across board, from servicing to repairs to electrical stuff to building stuff.
What did they do? Just give you a phone number, then you had to ring the number, or give you an
So
email?
you had a little portal, and the lead come through to that, and it had a phone number on, and then you'd ring, and I think it used to change. You'd have a personalized number to them, so they didn't have your direct number. It'd change, I think. Oh, there's a change. It was somewhere. This was like 4 years ago now, but yeah, it just started bigger jobs at first. What were tastier and better money, but I think that might have been because I'm a newcomer. And then it started dying out, and then you'd get getting like servicing through. That's all they were getting it in servicing. And then the people like, oh, someone's doing it for 50 quid, can you do that? And you're like, then it's just you're fighting at lower end of it. And I don't know how they prioritize stuff. Whether it were like people who paid more money, or whether it went on like your star ratings or your reviews. Because they want as well, they want all your reviews to go on that platform. So, and then they're not yours. So when you leave, say you've worked for Checker Trade for like got 500 reviews, then you didn't get them. Whereas my reviews, I had them go to my direct to my website. So they were all on there. But then on Checker Trade, it only like had 3 reviews, where I might have got like 23 or something. So I don't know whether that played a part in it as well. But then again, that's preying on you, taking your reviews away when you.
I should imagine there's some algorithms doing their thing, because
Yeah,
the other
that's the
thing
word
is
I was looking for. Yeah, algorithm.
some people are paying hundreds a month for their Checker Trade and others, aren't they? And I imagine
So
the algorithms take that into account. And the other problem
that
is,
company they've got
obviously.
set up just for checker, just for personally, just for like stuff like that. And they'll just like take it every month because they'll be getting bigger work. More money you put in, the more they're going to get you, aren't they? Same with everything.
And the other thing is a problem is if with this, some of the lead gen sites, if someone wants a job done and they're in a particular locality, you know, the lead generation sites might give that lead to about 10, 15 people in that locality. And of course, you know, that you then got like 15 people trying to compete for a job. And, you know, especially in our game, especially with heat pumps, you know, the amount of time and investment into, because you can't do a quote without going to see the property. You just can't do that.
Yeah,
You have to
no,
go and see the
no.
property, and the amount of time and effort someone might put into that, and then you're competing with all these. So the odds of you actually getting the job are quite slim. So that's another big problem.
Worst one I saw like that was, I think, is it called My Builder? You actually pay for the lead. So they'll say, we've got a lead in your area, and it'll give it to three installers, and you have to bid for that. So you might pay like £4 for this lead. And then they could have just gone out and got someone who's not even bidded for that and use a lot. So then say you do 10 of them a month, and it's a week, that's £40 or whatever you're bidding for it, and you're not getting nothing back from it. There's no guarantee. You don't know what's going on behind them closed doors. Yeah, I don't think they're great for industry. Is it? I think it's been bad. I mean, gas servicing ones are the worst ones out there that do lead generation, you know. Big companies just buy them up and then send you emails for like £17.50 and whatnot. There's no, if, yeah, another that's another topic for another day.
So I'm working with Hildebrand. They're making a site with other consultant partners called Glowmarked, and I want to thank you because you've been helping us. You helped us do the sort of the installer side of things the
Oh
other day,
yeah,
didn't you? We're
survey,
making
yeah.
a bit of a case study database that consumers can go on, see homes that have been had a heat pump that are similar to homes like theirs, and also. Where the consumer then can maybe find an installer so they can sort of click a button that says get a quote. Now, what are your ideas for that? Because you and I chatted earlier about how you was saying that there's the manufacturers list, and it's probably an easier thing just to sort of do that, maybe.
Yeah, manufacturers can be good. I think Ian, I read something about Ian Forbes put earlier about the Valent one puts you into the area, and then you can select your actual select your installer from the area that Valent will give you. They'll give you them. We advise them when people get in touch with Viessmann, and they then sent you the lead direct. So I'd get an email from Emma for like renewable stuff, and they'd send it to the installer that it's close for, and who do you think suitable for that job as well? Because a lot of manufacturers things as well. Some of them you've only got to go and do a course. You know, you could have turned up and done a 1 day course. So there's also issues with that because then you all right, you can offer extended warranties, but you might fit that product once a year, you know, and then on the other hand, what they've got is they've got them mass market companies that sell a lot. And I was like Snug and like Eatable and them lot that do a lot of like Viessmanns, and they get a lot of leads from them, but their quality is not that great either. So it's an hard lists and recommendations are always hard. And it's always going to be this transition to heat pump things, like where you're going to get these people from. For me, it'd be more word of mouth for other engineers or looking at that engineer.
Are there, I mean, the manufacturers list is a very, that's very sort of true what you said. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that person on the list is going to be that competent, does it? I mean, I'd imagine, well, we know that there's one list that would be, because obviously you've just been out to Sweden with them, and they you have to get on that list. You're going to have to go through quite a bit of
Yeah,
training.
NIBE Pro. So I had to go and do my training with NIBE there. So I'll only get on for air source. I mean, I need to go back to do my ground source to get on for that. And then they need, in fact, I've got quite a list of documents that they wanted off of me today. I might be able to. Sorry, bear with me 1 minute. He sent me a list to get on it. So I've had to grab my MCS, which obviously that doesn't really prove that much. But employer liability, professional indemnity, public liability, NVQ, my energy efficiency certificate, my inventor certificate, then my NIBE training. So I know it's to get a few of them things, you have to be quite skilled. It's not just something you can just do and get them. So there is checks they'll go through. And I'm sure if you started doing a bad job, they'd kick you off that. Because they are quite stringent, like they won't sell to anybody. You've got to buy through them as well, which is always a good thing because they then can control what the pro how the product's getting fitted. So if you have got bad installers on site and they're not directly linked to that for them, they could buy, I don't know, from Screwfix or wherever or Plumbase or fit that product, then that product's rubbish. When NIBE's then got the control over selling it direct, they know they've sell it to you. They know, yeah. So it's good to have that little aspect of it rather than just be willy-nilly.
Yeah, I had a chat with Johnny Hancock today, actually from NIBE. Yeah, I mean, we were chatting about that. You know how it's a that it's a very interesting model they got, because you have to done their training. You can't buy it, go to a, you know, anyone can go to a merchant and buy a heat pump, but you can't buy an EB because they want them to be installed properly, don't they? So you have to be.
The old ethos of the company from when we saw it all there were just yeah, it was different. You know, to what you usually see from just how they do things. I mean, they were saying there was still one of owners still answers receptionist phone. She's like 70, still answers phone in office as receptionist at headquarters. It's nice, you know, it's like a big like a family feel to it.
How do you verify competence? So let's say a site wants to have lots of engineers on. Let's say the site that you've been working with, and they we want sort of competent engineers to be on it. What are the sort? Because I'm obviously well known for saying qualifications don't mean competence. How would you verify the competence? Let's say there's a group. Let's say 100 engineers. How would you verify competence?
Oh, yeah,
I put you on the spot there, Dave.
it's always a tough one because one person showing their competence, another person could show it in another way. You know, someone might be good at paper, but someone might not, but they might know it in the head. So I think you've just got to vet them. You've got to, I think, conversation with them, talk to them, ask them certain questions. ask for previous work, customers' reviews on them, look at the website reviews or work that they're doing. Social media could help, what are other engineers and whatnot saying about them. It's so hard to tie it down to saying, oh, have they got a B-Pekin heat pump, or have they got the G3 or whatnot. There's certain things that you need to have to be able to do the job, but it wouldn't make you good. I mean, I'm no better just because I've done a nuclear food. Don't make me better than someone who could be better than. There's probably people better than me out there that's not done that, but they ain't got that bit of paper. It don't really mean that much. Like you said, peer to peer, I think, is the way to go. And be, I think, yeah.
Also, I mean, I'm obviously sort of a big, big sort of advocate of this peer-to-peer stuff, and I've sort of taught other sort of people involved in education around that sort of theory. But also something that works that we all do naturally is peer assessment. So we're doing it without even knowing we're doing it. When people like yourself and me and Steve and a host of loads and loads of other people are all chatting, and this happens across in all industries, you kind of get a feel of who's good. And that's going on sort of, there's an under sort of neath thing going on there. We're naturally assessing people without even knowing we're doing it.
Yeah, no, you look at things. That's one of the reasons why I put a lot of my work up on Twitter and whatnot. There's no other better way of learning than someone telling you've done it wrong. Like, I don't mind criticism; it helps me improve. You have a bit of some have a bit of a laugh and that, but that never bothers me. But yeah, if you never did that, I'd never get better at what I'm doing or advance in what I'm doing. There's still stuff I do now and put it on and like, oh yeah. The other day with that electrical wire, I would
That
have never known
electrical
about that supply
cable.
cable not being outside if they wouldn't have said it, and if I wouldn't have put it up, I would have done that on next 10 heat pumps. Now I know I can't do it. I can change that one and I can change my process and do it a different way. It's there's a I think it's there's, I don't think there's anything else as good in industry as being told you've not done something right by somebody else.
So
Boom, says it.
you don't mind it. You actually love it because you learn from it, don't you? And you handle it very well. Other people take it as criticism, don't they? And then they'll fight back, won't they? And well, no, I've got to do.
Don't get me wrong, there is a lot out there that some people do get a lot, and bullying, I don't agree with bullying side of it and that. I think you can be constructive while also being like stern and telling somebody in a way rather than crossing that line. But you also have to respect that all other people don't have like broad shoulders or don't won't take it on chin. They'll get it as an attack, and that comes down to personality. And that's where you can't tell that on social media because people are just behind the screen, and you don't know what they're like. So yeah, it can be hard, but for me, yeah, I wouldn't change it. I enjoy it.
Now, just to reinforce something we were talking about earlier, so estimates. So some companies will give out an estimate. They'll give a ballpark figure of what something might cost. So they might say, this is going to cost around 30 grand. Now, other companies don't do estimates. They do like what's called a discovery phone call, and they have a chat. You obviously sort of do this email that kind of does a similar sort of thing. It manages expectation. So do you give an estimate, or do you just wait till they get hold of you? They've seen your email and they said, no, we'd like you to come around for a quote, and then you actually go and visit.
So yeah, way I'll do it is what I was finding is I'd spend 20, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours going through stuff with people, giving them a hell of a lot of information, and then it not coming back. And then speaking to other people and my wife and whatnot, and people be like, why are you doing that? Like, you're losing time. Like, probably a day out of a week could be spent doing this, which were unpaid. So when I got talking to Craig Brooks and how he does it, and he was kind of struggling in the same way. So then I just sat down and I just like written email. So my first stage would be, I don't mind having a phone chat or a Zoom call with him, 30 minutes or so, getting a feel for him. If they're local, I'll go and see him, and just have a little look. Because there's things you can't do on Zoom. You can't look at like heat pump position and planting house where you need to run pipes, etc. But what I'll do is in that, I'll give them an estimate of what my average installs cost or expect to cost. So it ranges between like 14 and 22,000, take the grant off it. It can come in less, it can come in more, but that's just the basic average. And then the heat loss calc. So my first stage will be a heat loss calculation. It'll start at like £350 plus VAT. And that will be deductible against quote, if they go with me. If not, they've got a full eat loss calc, which is bulletproof, and I'd stand by that anyway. So they can go, I tell them they can go and they can have that sort of package. It gives them room by room. It's eat engineer stuff, it's Rob stuff.
Use, yeah, I was gonna say you use good old Rob stuff.
Perfect for that. So, and then I find that the people that are real serious that want to go with it, I've had a few where I've gone and done it, and then they've not been that bothered because cost to do the job against what they're going to be saving isn't that much, but they're still in a better position what they were before because they know what they need to do going forward to make that change. And if the electric pricing and what comes down, they'll know that they'll be able to get a bigger gap on the payback. It'll be quicker. But then I've had others that have just like come, yeah, we'll do it, you know, and that works for me now. It saved me a lot of time, although I've got a lot of heat losses from it. So, and I seem to just be doing heat losses at minute and not fitting actual heat pumps.
You could go out and be a survey.
You know, I enjoy it. Like, I've never thought of a time ever that I'd say it, but I'd happily now walk away from gas like completely and go full renewable. It's stress, it's hard work, and money's not that much better for what you put into it, but it's more satisfying. And I never thought I'd see it say that, but it's a good place at the minute.
Well, good on you, Damon. I'd like to say all us old school really sort of appreciate what you've done in the industry. I mean, Steve Webster, he's fascinated by you, as you know. He thinks you're brilliant. What just tell listeners where you're based.
Sheffield, South Yorkshire, but I do travel really wherever I've been, Bristol, although up down to Oxford, a bit up
You
north.
probably don't get too much work in Bristol done because that's where Craig lives.
No, actually, I went down and I actually worked with Craig on that job. So, yeah, I don't mind. A lot of people don't like going away to work, but we're working for council in the same place for 15 years. It's nice to go and see a bit more of country.
He's another super duper passionate engineer, Craig Brooks, isn't he? Based in
Yeah,
Bristol.
one at best out here, in my opinion. He's a top guy as well.
Well, and their company's called it's called Brooks Plumbing and
Steve
Heating, isn't it?
Brooks Plumbing and Heating, yeah.
Yeah.
He's based in Bristol in Winterbourne. He's a good kid.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show to talk about the sort of whole quotation process,
Yeah,
Damon.
no problem, mate. Been good to speak to you.
So I'm joined by Barry today from Renewable. Barry, what is your company's called?
Renewable heat.
It is Renewable Heat. Of course, it's Renewable Heat. Up one of my favourite engineers up in Scotland, one of my favourite companies, and obviously we're doing a piece around quotations. So, first thing I want to ask you about is, so when let's say I'm a customer, and I found you on the internet, so I might have see your phone number, so I might either ring you up or email you. Can you tell us the starting joint journey of a quotation process? What is that initial journey from me ringing you up and saying, "Oh, what heat pump? Yeah, I'm a or a
This
potential."
is me giving you all my special sales technique, isn't it? You need to pre-qualify it, really. So we pre-qualify everyone with a quick phone call to make sure they're doing it for the right reasons, because there's still people out there that think they'll put a heat pump in and save loads of money or get free heating. It's something it used to be. So we do a quick discovery call with them, just chat with them for 15 minutes, make sure we understand the motivation of why they're doing it, and make sure the house is suitable so they understand what's involved in it. Because the expensive bit of doing the quotation is going to be me going out and seeing them. So we'll chat about, look, we might have to change all the pipework. What's your floor finishing? Is that going to work? Are you doing this for financial reasons? That might not be the reason to do it. Understand where their house is and just double check things that we're not going to go and waste anyone's time.
Do you so is there an estimate? Do you give them an estimate? Some engineers give this estimate, don't they? Sometimes it's a verbal, sometimes they might even write that estimate down on. Do you have that and then the quote?
And that we don't have to because, as in two-stage quote.
Yeah, so some people will give a ballpark figure as an estimate of what it might cost for that size house, for that sort of kind of disruption that before they've even an engineer's even gone to the home.
Our sales marketing, a lot of our sales takes them through a guided process which qualifies them already. So they'll be told already. This is what to expect for the price. But I think most people are aware of what the prices are going to be. I don't know if it's just in Scotland, because Home Energy Scotland qualify a lot of them, or if it's just because that's what people have read enough about them now. They know what they expect and the costs.
Mm.
So no one's really surprised when they see it. Although, to be fair, in the last 6 months, the price is creeping up. So people are a bit more, a good few £1,000 more than what they thought it was going to be. Or maybe it's just me.
So you use some software that I've chatted to a few engineers about whether they use any form of software, any digital tools, quotation tools, and you are actually using one. What one do you use? Why do you use it? And what does it do?
Simpro. So Simpro is a material and staff management, really. So it's a way for us, we're talking about, we do a heat pump installation, there's lots of material involved. So what it allows us to do is to tender quickly. We can build a quote up very quickly because it allows us to do takeoffs, if you like, simplify each job. So we know exactly, for example, if we're doing an Ivy heat pump, I know the material I need to install the plant room. So rather than having to populate a quote every time, I just go that pack there. If we're doing underfloor heating, know it's that pack there and I can build it up very quickly. But the flip of that side is it simplifies the back office. So when they're ordering stuff, they can click a button and it gives a material list. But this follows through. So we get the material list, send it out for a quote. When it comes back, we can raise a PO for it. And that PO is tracked all the way through to our financial software. So it just simplifies and automates it all. The stuff we use is, you see it in the big M&E contractors, they use it all the time, but not necessarily Simpro. But it's just applying that, those practices, a good business really, of just tracking the material and the costs through. There's a lot of, maybe with a heat pump business, 50% of your costs are going to be material. So you have to be able to track it and measure it.
Well, this is one of the questions I'm going to ask. So obviously, a lot of homeowners that are reading about heat pumps, and obviously sometimes the newspapers have got it wrong. They say a heat pump costs $12,000. Well, it's not. It's the installation costs the money. That's where the numbers. So the next thing a consumer or homeowner might say was, why is it costing so much more than a boiler install? So you and I know, because there's so much more involved. There's so much more materials. There's a lot more of your time. You know, you've got to go out and serve.
It's a first heating system for a second time.
Yeah. What would your answer be to that? You know, why is it costing so much more to people?
It's like the first time we put gas into people's houses. It's not just the gas boiler that's going in. We're talking about a new heating system. We're also moving the stuff all over the house. The combi might be in the kitchen, but now the hot water tank is upstairs. Or the combi might be in the kitchen, now the heat pump's at the other side of the house. So there's the main part of your cost and disruption, is you're putting the heating system in again for the first time.
I'm just going to, yeah, I mean, obviously, so some people are thinking, no, I'll have all my pipes ripped out. Now, we don't necessarily have to rip everyone's pipes out, do we? And that's part of that assessment process, isn't it? You have to go you have to see what actually needs doing, because every home's different, isn't it?
I think this is the biggest constraint in our industry, is that it takes an installer almost to look at it to see what's involved. There's some companies out there that are just sticking just one sum to each job, so it's going to be $18,000 no matter what, and just making one size fits all, but it's not one size fits all. I don't think that gives the customer a good service.
So going back to this materials list, and you're raising a PO, just so people, the listeners, understand this. So that's raising a purchase order with a merchant or your supplier.
Yeah.
Does that get complex? Because obviously you will be looking around different suppliers and merchants for, you know, somebody might have a deal 1 week on a particular product.
You can split up. The software will let us use it. We can check the prices and split the purchase order between different suppliers if we need to. The idea is that we give the installers, our installers, a box of fittings every time it's the same, and they're never going to be stuck for a fitting. Some of it might come back, some of it not, because they're always a little bit heavy. But the reason is that they want to be there to fit the job, not go back and forward to the merchant. So that's one of the reasons why it's good to do this. So box material, you've got everything you need, get on with the job.
Is your software able to track changing prices within different your chosen suppliers?
So once we get the invoice in, we can check it off a purchase order, and if any prices change, we can change it there and then. So they're always only as old as the last job. Or what we do occasionally is just get our material master, send it to our suppliers, to two or three suppliers, and then we can check what's the cheapest in each one. So the job will create multiple purchase orders for multiple companies, if multiple suppliers if we need it. So that's, but then these are traits of a bigger company that you would need to be able to track. So a lot of administration is to make sure the prices are the same all the time. But that's, I think when you get to a certain size, you need to be doing that anyway, because you're more and more, your margin is dependent on material.
Is it beneficial for the sole traders as well, this sort of kind of thing?
It can be, if you can simplify it. Because we started off with just me and Richie using this software, my business partner, and we just simplified it by not checking the prices as often. But it does mean you can quote quicker and you've got, you know what you need every time. It's mainly about being repeatable and being quick. Rather than just using a spreadsheet or a bit of paper saying, I need this for this job.
So obviously with MCS, when a company becomes MCS accredited, they have to have a QMS and you're going to get audited for that. So would you consider, is this part of your quality management system or is this something completely different?
Totally separate. This is how we run the business properly. Now this software is just, that's only one element of it. Only one element is to run the material. The other element is we can plan the jobs through it. So I know how many hours each job does because we've got it built into the project. So the projects tell me, he's 100 hours for this job. This is the material you need. This is what it's going to cost. So that allows us to plan the guy's labor. So if you're doing multiple heat pumps a week like we are, you need to be able to forecast where we're going to put the guys and when, how long will it take. So this allows us to do it. The guys also use it for tracking hours. So we can, the guys will log in and log out and allow us to track how many hours they put in it. So we've got this feedback loop of how much material I thought it would take and what I thought it would cost and what it actually cost and how long it actually took. So it gives you a chance to keep closing that loop down.
Have you used any of the others? So I've been doing a bit of research about how many of these sort of stuff. There's quite a few out there.
There is quite a few, yeah.
Some of the engineers you and I were chatting with, some have been using Tradeify or Gas Checker, Trade Help, Service Mate. I mean, have you tried any of the others? Or are they doing different things? Is there a certain aspect of one that you really like, maybe?
We've had SimPro for 7 or 8 years now. So back then, there wasn't as much. But SimPro is an international company, so they'll continually update their software and continually... I don't know what the rest would be like, to be fair. I know a lot of my peers up here use the same software as me, which is always reassuring. You've made the right choice.
And is it also, is it a customer relation management, what people call CRM? Does it do that as well?
I use it as a CRM. We don't. No. You can track leads through. You can automate big sections of it as well. So when a job goes from one stage to another, so it goes from a lead from a lead to an inquiry, an inquiry to quote, you can use it as a CRM and track it through. But we've got marketing software as well, which does that for us. So we don't tend to use it. Right. So yeah, that is, we probably could use it for that.
Right. You just tend to use something separate for that separate job.
Yeah.
Which I think was what Wes was saying when I was chatting to him. I think that he uses something called Zoho as his CRM, I think.
Yeah.
And what is, so if you're, If you were to design, because you've got quite a little bit of a software, you know, you've been involved with software when you and I've chatted.
If you were to electronics years ago, so yeah.
If you were to design something a bit like SimPro, I mean, is there anything you would add to make it better? If it could be done. I mean, sometimes these things can't be done, can they?
The only complaint we have is we can't manage multiple teams very easily in the same page. So we have to use a Gantt chart, which allows us to see all of our work in one place and where the guys fit into it. SimPro is not great at that. So you can't really see. So there's maybe 10 guys running about any one time. So we want to see where all the jobs are at one screen. So we can see 2 or 3 weeks in advance. We can't do that with SimPro. So I can't see weeks in advance with it very easily.
What sort of prices do these software, these apps sort of charge? I mean, is it a monthly subscription, a yearly subscription?
It's monthly, I'll tell you the name actually.
Is it based on how many people you've got working in the company?
Users. I don't know. We pay quite a lot for it. it's running at hundreds of pounds. I think it's £400 or £500 a month we pay for, which it's quite a lot of money. But it's the size of business now we've got. And really, it would cost me somebody, cost me three or four times that to employ somebody to do what that does, if you think about it. So it's, and it does bring value. So it's very quick for us to change material on it. So, for example, we decide we want to change something, we're going to change it to a type of bracket we want to use for expansion vessels because it works really well. Or we see something on your podcast like, oh, we'll start using that. It's quite easy to add it in and it just filters through the software. So all the jobs get them straight away.
How many engineers you got at the moment, Barry?
I think there's 10 guys on. There's 10 guys. Mm. 10, I think. 10 working. And there are 6 in the office.
Nice little company. Anyone up in Scotland wants a heat pump? But these are one of the companies I recommend. So Barry, it's been brilliant chatting to you. This is what I'm doing with this particular podcast is sort of getting the listeners sort of understand quotation process from sort of from the engineer's perspective, and then I'll be mashing up to other people's perspectives as well. So thank you very much for that.
Simplify the material.
Here's what, Barry.
The takeaway for this is this simplifies the material management.
Yeah. I don't think people realise how much materials cost and how many of them there are. I mean, that is a big problem, I think, with this customer relationship with us. They just don't realise how much stuff is costing in our industry.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be 50% of the job or more. So if you've got drifts in this of 5 or 10%, that could be the profit for your business after your overheads. I think one of the biggest failures of small businesses is not to understand their numbers. Yeah. Understand your gross profit, understand your net profit, understand gross profit margins and stuff like that, because that's where your money is. Yeah. Drifts in those percentages are where what you take home. So we spend a lot of time with our accountant taking the bigger numbers from this, from the spreadsheets, from Simpro, which go into the accountancy software, looking at these numbers in detail, and trying to manage them better, because that's where things will slip. All it takes is a heat pump manufacturer put the prices up and you miss it and you're out by thousands.
Yeah. Is there anything, any of the product, is there variability in any of the products? So let's say copper pipe. Is that going up and down, or are things always on a trajectory up? Are there bits and pieces in our industry that are up and down?
Nah, I mean, underfloor heating seems quite stable, but everything else has took a jump up. I don't think anything's coming down. So I don't understand how we're going to get heat pumps down to this magic number, the same as a gas boiler, without reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, I mean, they're all made of metal. And metal's price, you know, if you look at it on stock shares, it's a bit up and down. But generally, the trajectory is always going in one direction.
We're in a market. For heat pumps, we're in a market that's growing massively across Europe. So how are we going to get benefit of that when demand's so high?
Well, thank you ever so much for that, Barry. You and I will be seeing each other very soon at the installer show.
No doubt.
Top man, thank you for coming on and doing this.
You're welcome.